91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Some people have fabulous problems to surmount, such as where philanthropic support could best be given for the most effect. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. Jenny Santee has the job of philanthropic advisor to big-ticket givers. Some of her clients are celebrities. Others are just really rich. Jenny Santee has written a book about her experience. It's called The Giving Way to Happiness, Stories and Science Behind the Life-Changing Power of Giving. She documents some inspiring personal stories of generosity and how giving can improve productivity and even give mental benefits. There's even a disorder called donor fatigue. Stay with us. Topical Currents after the news. And 7 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman on with you on this Monday afternoon, Bonnie.
A holiday time of year.
Time is short.
And it's the height of the gift-giving season, of course. But today's guest tells about those who bless others with gifts at most any time of the year.
She's Jenny Santee, and her profession is to advise big-time givers how to best make use of their generosity. She's also closely examined the ramifications, including psychological, of giving, and she has a new book.
It's The Giving Way to Happiness, Stories and Science Behind the Life-Changing Power of Giving. And Jenny Santee joins us now via Skype. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on your show.
Well, it's great to have you. And we're going to talk all about your book. But before we do, I'd like to begin with a little about you. Like, how do you become a philanthropy advisor? I don't see it in the classifieds.
That's true. Well, I've always been idealistic about my career. And I've always wanted to do something that makes a difference. I just didn't know how. And a chance encounter with someone who was a philanthropy advisor about 8 years ago was my start in this, because he ended up hiring me. And I essentially used my background as a management consultant. That's my training. I used my background in management consulting. And essentially, philanthropy consultant is a strategy consultant. I wear different hats, including strategy consultant, career advisor, family counselor, and sometimes an event planner, all rolled into one.
How do you get these clients?
Or how do they get you?
Well, I think because I'm in a profession where it's in such a niche that I've been able to make a name for myself in this industry, and just through a lot of hard work, through a lot of luck, I guess people just find you. And I've been so dedicated to this job over the years.
So it's word of mouth of someone who's used you as an advisor, maybe says to one of your clients, say, I've got about $50 million I need to get rid of. Who do you have in mind to help me?
Well, I wish it were really like that. But more often than not, people already know where they're giving to. And I often get called in when things have gone wrong. And usually it's, I have two different kinds of clients. And one of them is the wealthy family, wealthy individual type, such as people who have signed the giving pledge, you know, the Warren Buffett, Bill Gates giving pledge, and families who sign that find themselves in a position of great responsibility. Like, what are we going to do now? And typically, the idea of institutionalized giving is new to them. And so I'm brought in as a specialist, as an advisor, just as anyone, you hire anyone else, such as you hire an art advisor, you hire an insurance advisor, etc. And so I'm a philanthropy advisor.
And what's the second type of
the
client?
The second kind of client is the celebrity activist. Because if you think about it, celebrity activists have such tremendous potential to draw attention and support for different causes out there. Because whether or not we would like to admit it, when a famous person, whether it's someone from entertainment, from music, sports, royalty, or even a former politician would get involved and put his name behind the cause, people listen.
So what do you hope to accomplish with your book by sharing these stories? What do you want your book to do?
What I hope is that people will begin to see giving as something that is not a drudgery. That is not something that we do because, oh gosh, you know, it's an obligation. We have to help. But something that we want to do because we feel good about it. It brings us a lot of fulfillment. It is personally rewarding, and it changes our own lives.
Now, you're a philanthropic advisor career began mostly in Asia. You're a Filipina. Are there differences between your Asian and Western clients?
I think there are more similarities than there are differences. And the biggest similarity is that the philanthropic impulse, the impulse to give, stems from the heart.
We all know that giving makes us feel good, Jenny, but there's tons of science to support that fact now, and there's a lot of that science in your book. So I'd like to look at some of it, beginning with the fact that contrary to belief, we're not hardwired to be selfish, which I guess many people assume is true because of the survival of the fittest and the, you know, theory of natural selection. So let's look at some of the science.
Right. Well, it's about the survival of the kindest, not survival of the fittest. If you look into an fMRI through modern technology, we now know that when we give, there are two parts of the brain that are activated. And guess what? These are precisely the same parts of the brain that are stimulated by food and sex, as well as the thought of romantic partners. So in other words, these are the pleasure centers of the brain that are activated when we give and when we volunteer.
And explain the helper's high. I mean, is that like oxytocin? Is it what areas of the brain are they, and what chemicals are being released?
Well, you know, the runner's high, right? The powerful physical sensation mm-hmm. that we feel after vigorous exercise. Well, scientists also refer to the sensation of the helper's high, which is the powerful feeling, the great feeling that we get after helping others.
There's also mentioned in your book that philanthropy also increases one's productivity. How does that work?
Well, yes. Giving time gives us time. Isn't that an irony? Because what scientists find out is that giving time actually gives us a sense of what they call time affluence. So even though we are objectively losing time, because when we help others, when we have productive use of our time, then we feel that, wow, we're making a difference. Our time is being spent in a worthwhile manner, and we feel that we have more time than we actually have.
You know, many people hear the word philanthropists, and as you are an advisor to some of the world's most generous philanthropists, many people listening might assume that we're talking about money. Of course, we just mentioned time as being something that also can be given. But let's talk about all the ways that people can give in addition to money.
Absolutely. And you mentioned time. Time is a really, really big one. And, you know, let's just go back to your point on the word philanthropy, philanthropists. I actually don't like that word, and I don't even use it that much in this book or in my work, because when we hear that word these days, we think of big ticket donors. We think of Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, and we think that's something that is beyond our reach, and we won't even bother doing that because who has $1 billion to give away? So as you said, there are other things that we can give. And in this book, The Giving Way to Happiness, I've interviewed people from different walks of life who have given their time, their treasures, or their talents to different things, and who have found that their lives have changed in such profound ways because they gave.
Jenny Santee, in your book, you talk about that most people think your job is very glamorous. Perhaps you're rubbing elbows and sipping champagne with these rich celebrities, but you say it really isn't that way, that it's not such a glamorous thing, that you pretty much have a, well, not an average job, but it's not quite that glamorous. Expand on that, please.
Well, you know, one thing is that if you're working in the philanthropy sector, the social sector, and I've interviewed so many people who have encountered this as well, you're dealing with problems all the time. You're dealing with intractable issues. Here's a cause that needs support. Here's another nonprofit that needs help. Here's another person who's dying. You know, here's another another world issue that is so urgent that we need your help. So I've also explored this feeling of compassion fatigue, of donor fatigue, compassion fatigue that people in the social sector tend to feel. I mean, if you think about it, people who are exposed to the suffering of others on a constant basis, such as doctors, nurses, counselors, social workers, animal shelter workers, they're all at high risk. And so in this book, I've also explored the ways of how people are moving from the sense of compassion fatigue into compassion satisfaction, or the feeling of gratification that makes the strain of doing the work worth it.
Well, we're going to look at some of your stories after we take a break. We're speaking with Jenny Santee, and she's written The Giving Way to Happiness, Stories and Science Behind the Life-Changing Power of Giving. Stay with us.
And it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We're joined by Jenny Santee. She's a philanthropic advisor, even though she doesn't really like the term. She's also written the book, The Giving Way to Happiness, Stories and Science Behind the Life-Changing Power of Giving.
Do you spend some of your time and energy on others giving? Has giving changed your life? Call us, let us know, 1-800-743-9576. How do you give back or help? 1-800-743-9576 or radio at WLRN.org.
Jenny, I want to address this from the other side of the equation. You advise your clients, but what about the donees? You must get the full court press from many organizations and causes to get supported by your clients.
Well, yes, absolutely. That does happen. But what I have also found is that charities or nonprofits are also realizing that they need to be more aligned with what donors are looking for, and that there's no cookie cutter solution, and that whatever someone does or however someone gives should really be aligned with their passion and their capacity to give. Like, for example, there's a nonprofit called Keep America Beautiful, which is dedicated to beautifying public spaces all over America, that has revised their community engagement strategy. And now they're giving people several ways, several methods to engage with them, you know, whether they want to give their time or their money, in whatever way they're most passionate about, and in whatever way that best suits their lifestyle. So you can give your time to a local cleanup event, for example, or you can help launch a recycling initiative in your child's school, or if time is of the essence, then you can simply donate to help Keep America Beautiful fund its community improvement efforts. So that's just one example of a nonprofit actually adjusting to the needs of its donors.
Now, could you steer some of these clients to the way of WLRN Public Radio?
Jenny, let's talk about some of the stories in your book. I want to begin with, well, I was going to begin with Goldie Hawn, since that was actually maybe what motivated you to write the book. Is that right?
She was one of the many, many inspiring people I've met throughout my career who motivated me to write this book, because I've heard so many backstories of what happens to the life of the giver. We hear so many stories of how giving changes the world or how charities improve the world. But what do we hear about how giving changes the life of the giver? And that's the part that I was really, really compelled to tell.
Well, do you want to talk about Petra Nemkova?
Absolutely. And Petra has a beautiful story of how giving helps us transcend very painful experiences in life. Because, you know, in this book, The Giving Way to Happiness, there are basically five ways I've discovered on how giving changes the life of the giver. And this is just one way that giving changes the life of the giver. And that's how giving allows us to recover from very painful experiences in life, such as what happened to Petra Nemkova. She is a supermodel. That's why her name might be familiar. She's done campaigns for Victoria's Secret, for Sports Illustrated, and many other things. And she was vacationing in Thailand in December 2004. You know what happened back then, right? The Indian Ocean tsunami hit. And she was there on the beach with her fiancé, Simon, when the tragedy struck. And Simon, her fiancé, was swept away by the current and never seen again, while Petra broke her bones and was told that she might never walk again. And can you imagine that, what she went through? And what she did barely a year after this tragedy, and she was still recovering from her physical wounds and the grief of having lost the love of her life. Well, guess what she did? She was already back in the United States, far away from the scene of the tragedy, but she decided to go back to Thailand. And she went there to set up the Happy Hearts Fund. And this is because she wanted to help rebuild the lives of the victims who were left behind. And you know what she told me? Because I asked her, how has this changed your life? And she told me that by giving, you can heal faster emotionally, but also physically. And that there's a selfish element in it, because when we make someone happy, we become happier ourselves.
Well, of course, giving does have its selfish aspect, and as much as it benefits us as much as it does often the donee.
And maybe recognition.
Right, and but there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
I mean, it's hard to just say altruism can't benefit you as well. I mean, obviously, it does have a benefit.
Well, yes. I mean, this brings me to the story of David Foster, who's a 16-time Grammy-winning producer and songwriter. And I also interviewed him for this book, and he was so candid in his remarks. And he talked about his own giving, his own charity work, because he does a lot to support families of children who are undergoing organ transplants. And David said that, I don't do it to be a good Samaritan. I do it to feed my soul.
Mm. Well, does motivation come into this? I mean, for example, you know, people who give in order to, let's say, get a tax deduction. Is that still considered giving from the heart?
Well, I think what we're talking about here is, how can we give in such a way that it not only has a positive impact on the world, but also feels really rewarding, fulfilling, and just wonderful for us? You know, how can we give in such a way that we're not giving and it hurts, you know, giving until it hurts. Is that what we want to do? I think we should give until it feels great.
You know, I was thinking about caregivers when I read your book, who are truly donors and helpers, either by necessity or by choice. They usually get sick themselves, or they often get sick and get burned out. Did you look into that area when you were writing the book?
Absolutely. And the reality is that, I mean, sure, giving feels good. And we hear so many sayings such as it's better to give than to receive. And we hear about the joy of giving. But the opposite can be just as true. Now, giving can make you feel depleted, taken advantage of, and fatigued. And donors get disenchanted. Charity work can be really cheerless. And nonprofit workers burn out. Getting asked for things all the time gets annoying. So how do we get around this? I've discovered some ways that people continue to find passion and continue to be energized by their work despite these difficulties.
Well, talk about some of those ways. How do they do it?
Well, one thing I discovered is that, you know, for example, these days, there isn't a day that goes by that the mail does include yet another solicitation from yet another charitable organization looking for help, right?
Right.
So we experience what we call donor fatigue. But what I discovered through all these people I met and I interviewed is that donor fatigue doesn't happen because donors are broke, because nearly all of us can give a little more time, a little more money, a little more of ourselves. But the biggest reason for donor fatigue is that a person's generosity is not well matched to his or her passion.
Hmm. Interesting. So did you see some of that?
Yes. Here are some things that I learned from these people I interviewed. Here are some tips that will help you give until it feels great. And the first thing is to find your passion. Our passion should be the foundation for our giving. And it's not how much we give, but how much love we put into giving. It should not be simply a matter of choosing the right thing. Because if you think about it, it's a choice between good and good, right? They're all good. They're all good causes. So it's also a matter of choosing what is right for us.
You've had the client, Philippe Cousteau. He's a very dedicated man. We've had him on the program. What direction was his philanthropy aimed?
Well, this is on yet, and I talked about the five ways that giving changes the life of the giver. And as for Philippe Cousteau, whose family has had a long history in environmental work, the way that the giving has really changed his life is in how giving has elevated his career into not just a job, rather a calling. And Philippe talked about the difficulties of doing nonprofit work because he is running a charity. And he says it's very, very difficult to run a charity. And people only see the glamorous side of him scaling mountains and diving into the ocean and wearing a wetsuit. It seems like every day he's out there outdoors. But the day-to-day reality is that he's running a nonprofit. And so people like Philippe in this book also give advice as to how do you cope with the difficulties when your passion for the job can be your biggest motivation, but also your biggest downfall.
The number, if you'd like to join in, is 1-800-743-9576. We have some lines open for Jenny Santee.
1-800-743-9576. Do you give in accordance with your values and beliefs and your passions? We're going to take a short break. We are speaking with Jenny Santee, and she's written The Giving Way to Happiness, Stories and Science Behind the Life-Changing Power of Giving. Our number, 1-800-743-9576. Welcome back to Monday's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and we're visiting with Jenny Santi. She's a philanthropy advisor to some of the world's most generous philanthropists and celebrity activists. And she's written The Giving Way to Happiness, Stories and Science Between the Life-Changing Power of Giving. Again, our number 1-800-743-9576.
Jenny, tell us a little more about you, your background, education, and such.
Well, I grew up in the Philippines, and you know, growing up in a place like that where there's a huge gap between the well-to-do and the underprivileged, then it becomes ingrained in your mind, as it did in my mind, that I had to do something to make a difference. So that's where I began to be really idealistic. But I think that I'm just like many other people these days. I mean, people these days are really idealistic about what they want to do in life. Like, for example, if you had graduated from a top school, which I was, you know, I was always a very good student. And if you had graduated at the top of your class, maybe 20 years ago, you'd have ended up in Wall Street, or that would have been the ideal career. But I think a lot of people, especially young people these days, think that it's way cooler to be a social innovator than it is to be a banker. And that was precisely the way I thought as well, that I thought I'd rather do something that made a difference. But another very important consideration for me was that I wanted to do something that was deeply fulfilling.
That's interesting that what you're saying is, as a society, we're becoming more aware of philanthropy, at least the younger demographic.
I think it's so true and it's so inspiring, whereas the zeitgeist maybe 20 years ago is that greed is good, and now it's giving is good. That's the alternative zeitgeist that's emerging. And I cover more of this in the book, The Giving Way to Happiness.
Tell us about Joshua Williams, and then we'll take some calls.
Oh, Joshua Williams is actually a little boy from Florida I found so inspiring, because he is proof that we're never too young to make a difference. And Joshua was just 4 years old when he started his giving journey, and he was actually sitting in the back seat of his mother's car, strapped into the booster seat because he was so tiny, and they were driving home from church, and the little boy saw a homeless man on the street and insisted to his mother that, "Mom, we need to stop the car because I want to help that man. I want to give that man my money," because Joshua at that time had $20 in his pocket, which was his birthday money given to him by his grandmother. And so, okay, mom said, "All right, then go ahead, do what you want to do." And his mother thought that maybe this is just a one-off. Maybe it won't happen again. But apparently, this kept happening. That every time he would see a needy person on the street, he would insist that we need to help this person. Until finally, his mother said, "You know, you can't just keep doing that. It's not sustainable." So the little boy Joshua insisted that we can't just accept that. You know, if I can't do it myself, then let's involve the school, let's involve the church, let's involve the community. And so what happened barely a year after that incident is that Joshua Williams became quite possibly the world's youngest foundation president, leading the Joshua's Heart Foundation at the age of 5. And he was 11 when I interviewed him. But imagine, he was only 5 years old when he started his foundation. And when I asked him, "Joshua, what has this done for your life?" Can you believe what he told me? He told me, "I have found my purpose in life." Mm. It was so surprising coming from someone so young, when the rest of us already in our 30s, 40s, 50s, or many of us are still trying to find our purpose.
Exactly. Exactly.
Let's take a few phone calls for Jenny Santee. This is Joanna in Fort Lauderdale. Hi there.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. This is a topic that I actually think is very interesting, and I have a couple stories, but I'm going to be very short. One of the things that I was, when I was little, we used to be very poor in my family, and so I was always helped by other people. And then one day when I came to the United States, I was in a church, and I was giving like a testament how good my week has been because all the blessings that I have received. And then I suddenly realized that I was a taker, that I wasn't a giving person. And I don't know, at that moment I started to making an effort to give, and my life changed. I feel happier, and maybe I don't give a lot, but like I'm at work, I'm honest with my work, and I try to do like more things, little things for different people, and it probably is not money related, but it has to do with time and effort, mm-hmm. and I think makes me feel happy. And I taught that to my son, and he's actually a giving person, and that makes me happy to see that I pass it on. Because I always think, like, I see people all the time that I takers, and it's kind of uncomfortable. Like, people don't say anything to them, but we know who they are. And sometimes people that, when they do something good, they post it in Facebook, they like to be, like, feel good, but in another way. But it's better when you give and nobody knows that you gave that. Better than you do something good and nobody knows but you.
Well, that's two important points that Joanna brings up, Jenny. One is the role modeling, and the other, what about anonymity?
Well, that's a great story that you shared, Joanna. And the role modeling is something I also cover in this book. And actually, it's great proof that kids learn more from what you do than what you say. So if you think about it, talking about values, if you want to teach your kids values, what does that really amount to if you're just talking? But if you're actually doing things, then your children mirror that. And actually, this is a story told to me by Goldie Hawn in this book. And she tells me about this one day that her son Oliver visited her at home. And when it was later on in the afternoon, his son Oliver said, "All right, Mom, I gotta go now. Nice to see you." and Goldie asked, "So where exactly are you going? What's the plan today?" And he said that, "Mom, I'm going to the local hospital to read to the sick children there." And Goldie didn't even know that his son was involved in the local hospital helping the sick kids there. But his son said that, "Mom, I've seen you working on your foundation all these years, and I just thought I should do something to help as well." And that's when Goldie realized that you can't teach these values. You have to be a good example of it and show the joy that you get and show the impact that you can have.
Okay, thanks for your call, Joanna.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
And we'll move along to Ken. He's in West Palm. Hey there.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Ken.
Hi. Jenny, this is Ken. I'm from up north visiting West Palm Beach, and I'm feeling a little bit guilty because I left early, but I work as a school psychologist, and I feel like my passion is giving, and I'm doing that as a vocation, as my job. And I'm wondering, because I'm getting paid for it, does that mean I'm still, am I really giving? And in a way, I think I am. And with a previous caller spoke, and I thought, well, if people, not myself necessarily, are giving and others know of it and they don't mind and they care that they know of it, that might be part of the healing process. Because I think giving, if you can compassionately give and it gives you the joy, it comes to you as joyful, then to me that's good mental health.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think.
Jenny?
Well, yeah. On your point on your career being centered around giving, I have a whole chapter in this book about amazing, inspiring people who have made it their career to help others and how they have found a lot of happiness, fulfillment, and purpose in doing so. So I don't think you should feel guilty at all, because it is a hard job. And I'm sure there are times when you also wonder, oh my God, you know, how do I deal with all this? And that's why a lot of people who are in these kinds of careers say that, you know, you should also maintain a sense of identity outside of the work you do, because it can really get really exhausting. It can really burn you out. Mm-hmm. The second thing was that about anonymity, or I didn't quite understand.
That was the caller before, well, and Ken was responding to that.
Ah, okay.
Right.
Okay, Ken. Well, thank you so much for calling.
All right, thank you for taking the call. Bye. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Christmas.
And next up, it's Micheline in Plantation. Is that right?
Hi. Yes, Micheline. Hi, how are you? I've been listening to you for years.
Good.
I'm just calling because I was brought up with the understanding that there are three levels of donating, that you can donate so that, or give so that everyone knows, you know, like when you get a plaque, or you can give so that just the person that you're helping knows, or you can give anonymously, which is considered, you know, sort of the highest form. And I've been brought up my whole life doing in one way or another things, either donating or doing, you know, personal giving. For instance, for holiday gifts this year, for one family member, I gave them a small holiday gift, and then I also donated to have a beehive donated to a family overseas, and that was part of my family's gift. And I have a friend who works with the court system and works with children who are being removed from homes and sometimes difficult situations. And so she'll tell me so-and-so needs some furniture, so-and-so could use some dishes. So they don't know who I am, but it appears. and I recently found out that my daughter, who's in high school, who's a member of a couple of volunteer organizations in school, she works part-time, and she told me recently that she's been donating for the last year since she started having a job, and I never even knew. She just it was just the right thing to do, and everyone in my family's been taught that. So, and it just brings such a feeling of light into your soul. It's just a wonderful thing.
That's great, and Jenny.
Sounds like great. A great book.
Oh, thank you. And that's actually, it echoes what one of my interviewees said. I mentioned earlier what David Foster said about giving, is that he doesn't do it to be a good Samaritan. He does it to feed his soul. And on your point on giving anonymously, I actually explored this topic with a scientist, a Harvard scientist by the name of Michael Norton. I asked him, so what do scientists think about this whole question of whether we should give anonymously or publicly? Mm-hmm. And my specific question was, what kind of giving leads to more happiness and fulfillment? Is it giving publicly, or is it giving anonymously, which many of us think is a more virtuous way to do it, right?
Right.
And he said that studies actually show that giving publicly is the kind of giving that leads to more happiness and fulfillment on the part of the giver or the donor. And why is that? That's because when you give publicly, you allow yourself to experience the gratitude of those that you are helping. You allow yourself to have a relationship with those people or organizations that you're trying to help. And that interaction, you know, that kind of relationship then leads to a sense of fulfillment and happiness that you would have otherwise not gotten if you did not have a chance to interact with those people.
I think that's what Ken was trying to say about the giving anonymously versus giving publicly. We're speaking with Jenny Santi. She's written The Giving Way to Happiness, Stories and Science Behind the Life-Changing Power of Giving. We'll be right back after a short break. Thank you.
And we're back. It is today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We are speaking with Jenny Santi. Her book is The Giving Way to Happiness, Stories and Science Behind the Life-Changing Power of Giving. Let's go back to our callers. We have Estelle. Estelle's in Miami. Hi there.
Hi, Estelle.
Yes, hi, Jenny.
Hi.
Hi. First, I want to make a comment and thank you for such a wonderful book that can help many people. And I want to say that giving time has been the most rewarding experience for me. I have two questions. One is a personal question. Is how to set up a foundation or funds or money after you pass away. Is there any way, or there must be many ways, I imagine, you know, but something easier. It's not a lot of money, but it's something that I would like to do for my cause. And the other question is just to help. I volunteer with a non-profit organization that's dedicated to the art with theater, and they're having a very, very hard time. So whether I see that you say that you are an advisor, whether you will be available to, you know, just to advise this non-profit. It's a theater south company.
Okay, Jenny?
Oh, thank you for your questions, and I can see that you're really, really feel so strongly about your giving, and it's great to meet people like that. And your first question on how to set up a foundation, at the time of your death or to commemorate a loved one's life? Well, you know what I find is that the technical aspect of things, you know, the how-to, the legal part, that's actually the simple part, because you can just get a financial advisor to, let's say, set up a donor advice fund or a foundation, you know, whichever structure you want. But the more difficult part, the part that actually needs more thought, is on what is it going to be about? You know, what is the legacy that you want to leave? And what is this what is this foundation? What is this going to stand for? And how is it going to make a difference? And how is it going to reflect your own passions? And so for that, I would encourage you to actually spend time in reflection to ask yourself, what is it that you care more, what is it that you care most about? What keeps you up? What makes you tick? What makes you angry? What is it that really moves you? And make that the foundation for your giving.
Okay, thank you, Estelle.
Thank you, Estelle.
All right, thank you.
And we'll take another call. This is line one, Bob in Fort Lauderdale. Hi there. Bob, you're up.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Bob.
Hi there. Thank you. It's great to hear about giving. This it's a very important part of my life. You know, you've got to give it away to keep it. The thing I wanted to mention is something that I learned from my grandfather. We're Jewish, and it, you know, the act of giving flowers, sending flowers to a funeral, is just not something that you do in Judaism. My grandfather always said you have to make a donation, because if something good doesn't happen from the death of another human being, then the death was for nothing. And, you know, I've worked for people who aren't Jewish over the years, and they've always said, you know, oh, send flowers to such and such. And I always go back and say, how about we make a donation instead? And they're like, why? And I explain that, and they're like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. So it's I just wanted to sort of touch on the whole Jewish spiritual idea of what we call tzedakah, where you just give anonymously or not anonymously, because that's what you're supposed to do.
Okay, Jenny.
I think it's a beautiful practice, and it reminds me of yet another story that I cover in this book, and it's about a family who's commemorating their son who died in very tragic circumstances. This is the story of the Alderman family. Liz and Steve Alderman were parents to Peter, who died on September 11th, 2001. Because Peter, who was only 25 years old at that time, was attending a conference at the World Trade Center. And so, you know, when they were mourning his death together with the family and together with the country, they're mourning this tragedy, Liz and Steve asked themselves, what can we do to make this something that's meaningful to Peter? Because he would not really care about having a memorial, you know, like a statue built in his memory, or a building or a plaque to commemorate his life and death. And so Liz and Steve sat down together and thought, what should we do that would be meaningful to our son? And they decided that they would get involved in charity work to alleviate the suffering of victims of terrorism and violence in post-conflict countries. And so what happened was that they got involved in this work, and it snowballed into a foundation. And so their family home became the headquarters of this foundation, with their guest room converted into an office, mm-hmm. and their daughter serving as a foundation CFO.
And what's the name of the foundation?
It's called the Peter C. Alderman Foundation. And so Liz said that this experience has opened up a whole new world for her as a mother. And this has also helped her family find strength by helping others.
Thank you.
Also remember their son in such a beautiful way.
Thank you. Thank you, Bob, for calling.
Thank you. Thank my grandfather.
Okay. Well, it's been a pleasure speaking with Jenny Santi. She's a native of Manila. She's a philanthropy advisor to some of the world's most generous philanthropists and celebrity activists. She was the head of philanthropy services in Southeast Asia for the world's largest wealth manager for 5 years. And now she's written The Giving Way to Happiness, Stories and Science Behind the Life-Changing Power of Giving. And what's your website, Jenny?
It's jennysanti.com. That's JennySanti.com. And I'm also on Twitter. And the book is available wherever books are sold, so Amazon, Barnes & Noble, etc.
Okay, well, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
It's our pleasure.
Thank you. And our apologies to those callers we couldn't get to, Vincent and Alexandra. Sorry about that. Thanks for tuning in this hour. Our producer, Richard Ive. Technical direction by online producer, Paul Leary. Of course, we always have free audio archives for download at our website. That's WLRN.org. Also, check out the Topical Currents Facebook page for links and photos. Drop us a like. Tomorrow's program covers some of the pitfalls of Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, Instagram, and the like. We'll visit with attorney and author Ethan Wall, who specializes in social media law. It's a return visit by attorney Ethan Law. I'm sure you'll find him most interesting, right, Bonnie?
Very much so.
We're getting ready for that program.
Right. Find out all the rules of Facebook hiring and firing.
We'll open the phones for your questions, of course. Join us then. This is Joseph Cooper for Bonnie Berman. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.